Session number 1127, rule 7.
Seven. When you went into your attack in Tobruk, the attack you were wounded in, Mr. Bell, had you been given any instructions on not stopping for wounded at all?
No, there was no instructions given whatsoever. The only thing that they told us was there'd be no artillery barrage, no tanks. It was more or less a surprise attack. And all they did, they took us up onto El Adam. El Adam Aerodrome we were attacking, and lined us up, you know, the various company's positions, said, right, oh, advance. The whole idea was to try and get up to their forward positions, you know, the sentries and people like that. Try to get them down first before they could alarm the main people behind them. Right? I'd got, three quarters of the way, and I suddenly discovered my rifle was empty. So naturally, I just cut down, start the reload. As I start the reload, bang, something hit me. And, you know, I just had to lie there till everything quietened down. There was a young lad from Bishop Auckland came over. He said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Yeah, you know." And then there was a bit of firing going. I said, "You better bugger off. It looks as though they were counterattacking." So he said, "All right." I said, "Go on your way." He's only a young lad, maybe in his 20s. And another lad came over and he picked us up. I said, "You put us down." I said, "Or I'll pass off." He said, "Well, I'll go and get a stretch." Everything had quietened down then. They must have took the positions then. And they came across with a stretcher. And this bloody officer, oh, I forget his name now, the canny bloke, like, but he started driving me around and I was screaming the place down. He said, "Now look, you, I've got to put a field dressing on." So he would take my trousers off. Well, you can imagine, my leg broke. And he started to take my trousers off. And I was... But anyway, they got me on a stretcher. Took me alongside the road. We laid there outside the regimental aid post. And I don't remember them giving us a needle or anything. We kept giving us tea. Whether it was doped up or not, I don't know. But everything was done. The ambulance came along, and there was three of us, Derhams, they shot us in, and two ITIs. Well, his ITI started. I don't know whether he was giving himself the rough right or what. But this lad up on, he said, "If that bastard didn't shut up, he said, I'll strangle and get." So anyway, when we got to the hospital, he was dead, his ITI.
What was the hospital conditions like? You did describe the building.
No, I couldn't really because it was dark, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And they took me along, dumped me on a stretcher, and the bloke came along with a mobile x-ray, you know. And I don't know what he was, whether he was one of these medical corps, I don't know, it was staff sergeant or something. Well, he said, "You're all right for the next 6 months." I said, "Bugger off, I'll be back in a fortnight." They just laughed. And they weighed me in the theatre. And put me on, I suppose, what you call a spider. You know, so they could put the plaster on. It wasn't an operating theatre bed. It was like, you know. And they didn't give us a needle there. Bloody ether. Well, you know what it is when you get an ether. They were done. You start, I remember the doctor said, "Hey, you, if you don't keep still, I've got three bloody audio to keep you still." And as he said that, I passed out. Then I woke up in the ward.
Did you get the impression that the hospital was overcrowded in any way? Was there a lot of wounded?
Yes. Well, yes, there was. But somehow or another, you didn't seem to be in the middle of it. You know, you seemed to go into this theatre. They did you up and out. And, you know, obviously, that one of the orderlies told me, I said, the surgeons had been working for 3 days without a stop. I said, "Well, how the hell are they doing?" He said, "Taking them tablets to keep them going." So,
was there any women amongst the staff of the hospital?
No, there were no women up the desert. But anyway, they get on, they said, come along the stretcher, like. All I had on was a shirt. Put us on the stretcher, where we going? Hospital ship. And I thought to myself, you know, belonging to Hartlepool, knowing a bit about ship, well, how the hell they're going to get us out there? Because it was anchored off, it didn't come in and go alongside. So to get you there, they put you in the life belts across the dunes. Eh? All you had was a bloke at the back and a bloke in the front and another boat towing three life boats out. But of course, when he went alongside the ship, you had to be bloody careful. You can imagine the stretchers sticking over the side. Anyway, they got dunes and they heaved us up. And they had a hell of a row. I said, what the hell's going on there? The matron on the ship, you not touching them men aboard my ship in that state. You know, a beard down here, never had a wash or a bath for months. And an old colonel there, you could see the red tabs on him. He said, if you don't shut up, he said, I'll put you ashore here to the matron. He said, them men, he said, have earned it. You shut up. So anyway, they took me down below, put us in a bunk, and looked. Well, we might get a wash and shave and what have you now, like. And he come round this orderly and he said, here. I said, what the hell's that? A light belt. I looked at him, I thought myself, I said, are you all right? He said, don't blame me. He said, them the orders. Everybody that comes on this ship must have a light belt. I said, what happens if anything happens, like? He just shrugged his shoulders. When you pass the part of the mobile, he's given us a bloody life belt. About two decks down. So anyway, they did. They gave us a good feed and brought up water around and, you know, got washed and shaved and cleaned up the best way we could. Then we went down, we went to Alex. When we got there, I looked at him. Down below, you couldn't see what was going on. They brought us up on the deck. I looked. Tide was, you know, what tide there was. And the deck was about, what, 15, 20 foot above the quay side, and all there was a gangway. And they had black South Africans. And the bloke on the front had the stretcher on his shoulder, and the bloke on the back of him had bent down like this, going down the gangway. I told him. Then we got, they put us on the train, and we got to Cairo. I guess to this hospital, it was the 63rd General, I think the cook was. There was a college converted. And of course, the ladies all out in rows. And I'm looking, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? They were taking all that walking wounded in first. I said, this lad the next stretcher. I said, hey, you all right? He said, right, bloody carry on this. I said, just hang on. And there was a sister come past. No, she was assistant matron. I said, excuse me, matron. She said, yeah, what can I do for you? I said, can you give us a blanket? I'm bloody cold. Next thing I knew, boop, straight in. And I laughed. Anyway, the guy's in the bed. And our sister come. She said, have you been? I said, no, I haven't been for 10 days. You know, plaster and all that. And next thing I knew, they whipped the bloody screens round. An enemy. The first thing they give us. I couldn't believe that was before I got my breath. Never even said no, she just whipped the screen round, bloody enemy. And they put us in a ward, and everybody in the ward was in traction. Everybody. And there must have been about what? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Maybe about 26 in the ward. A few NFs, which, you know, the same.
Someone a few years.
Yeah, you know, the same gang as us, like Geordies, and all the rest of them. And there was a lad in the next bed. There was a door there, a lad in the bed over there. How are you doing? Oh, not too good. I looked at him, it was pretty funny, like, you know. And, you know, he's cheerful enough, like. But they took me in on Christmas Eve to take the plaster off. When I come back, his bed was empty. It was 3 days after when they told me he died. He'd been, I don't know exactly what had happened to him, but they couldn't pump blood into him fast enough. Well, I should have known because the matron came round and she was sitting writing a letter for him. And I thought myself, well, that's bloody funny at the time. I thought, oh, no, she must be just cheering him up. But the one that told me was a nurse from Sunderland. And she said, we just put him in another ward. When I came out, from the operating theatre. And I went in anyway, and when I'm going to the theatre, there were some young kids there, Christmas Eve, coming around Callancing or something, and they're all, ooh.
What were the conditions like in the hospital? Was the food okay?
Well, not for me, it wasn't. I don't know about, well, you know what I mean. Oh, it wasn't bad, you know what I mean, doings. But they said to me, right, you're on a chicken diet to build you up. I got a bloody half a chicken every dinner time. The Egyptian chicken, they're about the size of a good-sized pigeon. So you've got half of one. And they were always broiled. They were never roasted or fried. And I was like, oh, that's why I won't eat it now. Puts me right off. But apart from that, it was, better than what been having, but the idea is that, build me up.
Did there seem to be sufficient medication?
Yes. See, when you went up the desert, all you had was your men, your orderlies, leave that orderlies down there, but one or two little incidents happened in that ward, give you some idea of the life. On the opposite side of the ward to me, there was two young lads. One young, very young, in his late teens or early 20s. And the other lad, he was out to Leicester's, I think, or somewhere. But he was, about his 30s. I'm getting on the same age as me. And I saw this doctor go over. And I heard him, couldn't hear what he was saying, but I heard this lad say, he said, get me in and get that bugger off. He chopped his leg off. And they were both done the same way. Now, you see, we went up there and learned early. Now, every driver up there had to drive with a sandbag under his seat. These buggers didn't. He'd have landed mine. And the young lad, I heard him say, no, you're not going to do it to me. You're not going to do it. What will my mother say? And I heard the doctor say, your mother would be pretty glad to see you, even if you have only got one leg. Well, it took them 3 days to calm him down before they could take him in and, nerves. Well, this other bugger, the next day, he's running around the ward in a wheelchair with a bit of plywood under his stump, fetching the tea round. The difference in people, see? And, there was another bugger in there. He was more than grunting, and they shifted him out of it. I heard the sister say, you at the least been here. And if you don't shut up, you're out. And she did. And everybody was in traction, everybody with the beds tipped up and bloody. it must have been about another fortnight. Got Christmas over. A bloody South African, ATS lass come in. She said, I bet you're a funny bugger. I said, you would say that while I'm last over here. She just laughed all the way. But anyway, one of the Durham officers come round in January, later on. He said to me, don't you wish you were the boys? I said, where are they? He said, Malta. I looked at him. I couldn't believe me bloody ears. I said, Malta? He said, yeah. I thought myself, later on I was thinking, they must think we're bloody bomb happy, the lot of us. When we first went up, we went to Mersey. The bomb dealer was there. We had no ACAC, no bloody fighters, no bugger at all. Then we goes into Brook. We got bombed there. I said, they must think these buggers could stand the bombing. But anyway, they'd gone to Malta, it must have been what? I've been there, about 6 or 7 weeks. Maybe more longer, I'm forgetting now. This bloody officer, MO, come round. How are you doing? I said, not too bad, I was still in traction, they took the traction off, that was in a couple of days after. I said, what about sending me home? He looked at me, he said, home? I said, I've been abroad 7.5 years. I don't believe you. He wouldn't have it. And I said, I'm telling you, I've been abroad 7.5 years. And then he went away. Next morning, the bloody stretcher alongside the bed picked me up. On another hospital that he shipped down to South Africa. We gets on there, and the MO there, he said, Durham's. I said, aye. He said, were you in Shanghai? I said, aye. Right, oh, yeah, it was over the bloody moon. I said, well, you know, what are you? Oh, he said, I was a civvy doctor in Shanghai. And he brought me a load of bloody old Shanghai papers in. To anywhere. The one thing that did strike me there, there were two chaps. One was blind, another one had no hands. And they mucked in together. Now, I suppose to you, it would be pathetic. You know, if you saw, you know, that sort of thing, blood and no hands, and mucking in together. And I looked, I thought to myself, well, you know, what the hell would I do in a position like that? And if the blind lad wanted to go to the toilet or anywhere, the lad with no hands would lead him, right? And if the lad with no hands wanted to go to the toilet, the blind lad would go in and take his pyjamas down or whatever he had on, you know, so he could perform, right? And, you know, and they weren't despondent. You know, the favourite song, I think, was I'm a Polar. We'd be singing all bloody day. And this one with no hands, he once said to me, he said, ah, wait till I get me bloody false and get on that typewriter. I'll have something to say. And, you know, afterwards, when I've looked back at it, you know, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, instead of making us depressed, it made us, you know, it lifted us up to think the two lads could do that to each other. Right?
Was this usually the case that you found in hospitals that you did lift each other up, you did help each other a great deal?
You had to.
How did the staff treat you in the hospitals that you're in? Were you satisfied with the way the staff
I have a photo somewhere, something had happened that sort of breaks things. There was a young lass came on the ward, but she wasn't a nurse. She was a VAD or whatever, you know, whatever they call it, auxiliary. And I think she'd come from Palestine. But we used to kid her up something rotten. She said, the only time you go out, you'd be with bloody officers. She said, I'll tell you, she said, the first time you look and walk around, I'll go out with you to the pictures or whatever you like. We kidded her that much. She gave us all she went and got like a little passport photo, signed it and gave us all one. I've still got mine. Cynthia Whitfield, they called her. I often wonder what happened to her. I think she'd come down from Palestine. You know, in them days, Palestine was Palestine. And, you know, you could talk to her and, you know, kid her up. You know, say, oh, you're beautiful and all this sort of thing. Well, with the nurses, you know, you knew when to stop. So, anyway, we get down to Durban. I said, oh, well, still stretchy. Gets us off. Put us on a train, and before that train pulled out, they came on with tea, biscuits, cakes, sandwiches, cigarettes, matches, anything you wanted was there.
This was the South African civilians?
This was the South African civilians. You didn't pay for nothing. So anyway, we'll get to where we're going to a place called Pietermaritzburg. We get to halfway up, we stopped again. Then they came on again with tea, sandwiches, anything you wanted, it was there. Cigarettes, matches, anything you wanted. So anyway, we get to the hospital, took us in the ward. Now, I told you, I'd been on my back 3 months then, bedpan and all the rest of it. Looked, like on the corner, like, say, where that was, it was a toilet. The bed was here, so there were no nurses in, so I ups up into the toilet. Thought, right. The next thing I knew, was alone in the ward. So when I come out, this bloke said, you're a right bugger, you. I said, what's the matter? He said, that sister just rollocked me somewhat bloody awful. You were a bed patient. You shouldn't have been out there, in there. And as it happened, they were all Canadian sisters. And, you know, she'd give us a little bit. I said, blah, blah, blah. Ah, right, though. And I shifted it into another ward.
And Did you get much in the way of visits from the civilians at all?
I wouldn't say so much. You mean...
like hospital visits?
No, not really. But they used to invite the lads out, you know. They had a system where as soon as you could get about, they come to me and said, would you like to go up to Newcastle? I said, what? Newcastle? I said, what do you mean? She said, oh, well, there's a farm there. And they'll take 3 of you for a long weekend, you know, like Friday to Monday or something like that. And right around, you would go and visit them. And they had little bits of dances and things like that on, you see, for you. But, like the WVS, one lot would come round one afternoon with cigarettes, matches and all that, and other people would come round with pyjamas and pullovers and Christ knows what. And the next lot would come round the next day, they'd like three lots every day, with soap, shaving cream and all the rest of it, you know, things like that.
How did you find the time going over, coping on your back, as you say, for such a long period of time?
Well, they more or less had to get used to it. I mean, you couldn't do anything, you know what I mean?
Didn't cause any upsets, of course.
No, not really. We knew they couldn't have, but then, you know, I mean, you shout, talk to each other, you know, in the beds, you know.
Were you receiving anything from home at all at this time?
No.
Was anything coming through from home?
No, no. I did send the one myself, like, you know, them doings, you know, what I did, the microfilm them, you see, and sent them the state, like, I was in hospital and, you know, everything was all right. But I didn't get a one then, no. See, I'd moved on, and of course, I'd go to battalion, and by the time I got back, I was away. But the thing that one thing did annoy me there in Cairo with these parsons. Now, you know, I was brought up religious. Well, I could say religious. I had to go to church twice on a Sunday, and the old lady was. And I looked, and I come round, and I say, bloke, but on the end of your bed was your doings with your religion on. Just look at that, and he walked straight past you. See, if a bloke would come in, do the same. And the only bloke that stopped at every bed was one of these Baptists. And he stopped at every bed. All the rest used to walk well. You know, with them coming around practically every other day, they knew where the various religions were, you see. And that bloke used to stop at every bed. Just a few words, you know.
And how did they try to help you when they did stop? Was it...
Well, they couldn't do much for you, you know. They'd ask you, you know, if you wanted writing paper or something like that. Well, if they give you writing paper, you couldn't write a letter. You had to get these microfilm things, you know, little, only about that big, put in, you know, you couldn't tell people anything, really. Yeah, I couldn't say, right, oh, I've just come from Tobruk or whatever it was, you see. You couldn't name places. I did write the old man when we were in Tobruk, and the only way I could do it, I said, I'm in the hottest place in the Middle East. It was besieged then. And I said to him when I came home, I said, dear Tumble, he said, I had a bloody good idea. He said, were you putting that in? He said, I could see you didn't mean heat. Eh? So, anyway, we get down there, and gets in this ward. As I say, though, Canadian sisters, a little thing, I don't know whether it amuses you or not, bed person. A young nurse come up, beautiful she was, bed bath. I looked at her, I said, no. No, I mean, I'd been in hospital for a bloody month then. And no, no, you've got to have a bed bath. I said, no way. She said, well, why not? I said, look, no way. She started crying her bloody eyes out. Anyway, she beat it. Next thing I knew, it was a 50-year-old Afrikaans woman come in, she whipped the sheets off of well, yeah, well, I was a dead letter. She would be about 18, 19-year-old, and she was beautiful. Well, you can imagine, you know, when she started... Well, she started crying her eyes out. I found out later she was a Brigadier General's daughter. And she wouldn't speak to me after that.
The doctors, were the South African doctors?
Yeah, yeah. And the staff was mainly, well, anything that people I had to do with were South Africans. But anyway, what was the little, the other one, favourite story, went down for physiotherapy. All I had on was a pyjama jacket. And this nurse said to me, you know, there are wires on here. You know, start to get the muscles going. She said to me, we had the concert last night. I said, no. She said, well, I can't understand it. I said, what? So when all that comedian said to the men, it's not true what they say about Chinese girls. And all the men bust out laughing, laughing their heads off. She said to me, what were they laughing for? I looked at her, I said, nah, I said, go and find out, go and ask somebody else. No, no, she said, you know. I said, oh, I know what they were laughing at. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, it doesn't go like that. I said, it goes like that. You know, they all say, the Chinese, the same things, you know. And she pestered me for about 10 bloody minutes, and I couldn't get shot of her. Oh, I said, bugger off. Anyway, you know what I mean? I felt proper bloody embarrassed, you know. I mean, before she started talking about this, you see, just had a pyjama jacket on, no tells.
Was there any black labour or black workers in the hospital?
Oh, yeah, there were black cleaners and people like that, you know, not nurses.
How were they treated at that time, so many years ago? Was there any...
Well, give you an insult, get from the story. I said, hey, what about getting down to transit camp? You see, while we were in hospital, you only got 10 bob a week, pay. Right? And we'll get on the transit camp, and then you do a bit of pay, we'll go down the town and have a couple of pints. And me and this lad out the Leicester's, he'd lost his leg. So anyway, we went down the town, had a couple of pints from the transit camp. Of course, we were in uniform then, we weren't in doings.
Were you walking at that stage, or could you manage to walk?
Oh, yeah, I could manage then, you know, manage all right.
Were you on crutches?
No, I had a stick. You know, I managed to get off the crutches and that, like, you know. And they give us a calibre, but I wouldn't wear the bugger. I could walk better without it than with it. So anyway, we said, fair enough, like. But anyway, we got down and we said, right, we better get back to the hospital. You know, we're on about the treatment of the blacks. So we get up to this bus stop. We're about two whites there and about 20 blacks. And it was four of us. So we get on the bus and we had to sit in the first five seats. And let the blacks on and he said, that's it. I said, well, there's plenty of room here. Where we were sitting, it was half empty. They wouldn't let them on. They were allowed their first. And one of our blokes said, yeah, he said, there's some of them buggers up there fighting. He said, look, you, he said, I live here. You let them live the way we live. Wouldn't, you know. And actually speaking, we didn't have very little to do with the blacks, you know what I mean. The South Africans had them up the doing, but they didn't arm them, you know.
Had them up the front line?
Yeah, followed them up the desert, but they didn't arm them. Whether they pinched any, you know, like eye tie stuff or out like that, the blacks, I don't know. I mean, I never met them, you know, never mixed with them. But they had them up there, you know, doing all the cooking and things like that, you see. Same as if they'd been in bloody home. And, well, anyway, right, they're getting a bit browned off there, and I said, yeah. So I looked on the morning on the rota list, bought for home, like. All the names, that wasn't done. So I grabbed all this South African Sergeant Major. So there you am, they're on there. No, oh, he said, well, I'll tell you what, he said, we'll go and see the company commander. So I went in, saw him. Oh, yes, he said, you're still a stretcher case on here. So he said, how do you expect to be on that? So anyway, we'll go, and I go back to the camp, like, and about half an hour after this RSM come in, he said, hey, you, how long will it take a pack of gear? I said, about 2 minutes. Well, he said, a train there, if you're on that train, you're on your way home. I was on it all right.
What time would this be? What date?
Oh, this would be, what, back into June, 41. 42. Yeah, back into June, 42. And, now I was on. So we gets down to Durban, gets on the boat. It was a Dutch ship. New Holland or New Amsterdam, I can't remember now. So anyway, we gets on the boat and then I looks. I said, where are we going? Down there. I said, no. Down the Four Peak. I don't really know if you know what I'm talking about. Four Peak. So, you know, we're living here. Over the top of the bloody chain locker. I looked, I thought, well, they're not putting us down there. I mean, we're all supposed to be invalided home. So I looked at that, oh, no. So anyway, we had to go front of the MO. He said, yeah, all right. I said, well, I can't get up and down them stairs. I didn't say ladders, stairs. But he said, all right, shift your gear in the hospital. So I shifted my gear in the hospital. I thought myself, wouldn't be so funny, eh? I mean, I'd told you before I joined up, I'd been going to sea down there. I said, we need bad weather down here. So when we get down to Cape Town, we couldn't get in. It was a bit blowy. And they had to fetch them out. So she started taking a few over the top, and it was only like ordinary. It wasn't a proper opening. It wasn't a door even. So they had to batten it down, and they brought them all out. But what annoyed me was, he had, I think it was 150 matlows and about 200 raft blokes all down the midships.
Were these, were not wounded men?
No, the matlows were survivors, you know, them that lost the ships. The raft were people that had been on the Empire training scheme, you know, during the war. They sent a hell of a lot to Canada, Rhodesia, and these places, you know, for learning them to fly and, you know, the gunners and all that. So, anyway, I moved up in the hospital. And we got outside, we had to do board drill. So I gets up and I looked. Oh, what the hell is this? There was 250 women and kids aboard, evacuees from Singapore.